on weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. Thanks to JJ, who no doubt had a great weekend with Munster and the Limerick Hurlers both winning. It's Monday, the 18th of April, and this is Game On. Coming up today, Jane Mangle will join us to look back on the Grand National. Neil Ewing and Niall Moran will dissect the weekend of Gaelic Games action. The quarter-final pairings of the European Cup have been decided, and after the weekend's blockbuster encounters, Shane Byrne has more. And we'll have Alan Cawley and Tony O'Donoghue to talk football. If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. We are going to get straight into the racing because the Grand National has just finished and 40-1 short. Lord Lariat has won the Boyle Sports Irish Grand National for trainer Dermot McLaughlin and jockey Paddy O'Hanlon. It's a triumphant back-to-back for McLaughlin after he won the Grand National in 2021 with Free Wheelin' Dillon. He was an amazing 150-1 triumph. Now, I'm delighted to say that Jane Mangan joins us to talk us through the action. Jane, how are you?
I am still trying to figure out what happened in that national. There were 27 of them faced the starter, 15 of them finished, and I'm still scratching my head. I wouldn't have picked that winner for diamonds.
Well, Jane, if you don't know what happened, we absolutely will not know ourselves what happened. But do you know what? Let's have a listen back to the closing stages and we can try and figure it out together.
Coming to the second last, and it's Lord Lariat who leads over for Dermot McLaughlin. Near side is Gaillard de Menil, then Velvet Elvis. Far side, Frontless Stolt is still there. Screaming Colours won't go on without a fight. And it's Lord Lariat to the last in front from Gaillard de Menil. They're being chased by Frontless Stolt and Velvet Elvis. Lord Lariat's over the last in front, and he's a 2-3 length advantage. Lost Ronald Bump at the last and up towards the line, would you believe it, for the second year in succession for the 150th Boyle Sports Irish National. Dermot McLaughlin has done it again. Lord Lariat and Paddy O'Hanlon beat Frontless Stolt, toast third between Gaillard de Menil, Screaming Colours early doors, and then came Velvet Elvis, Champagne Platinum, then came Max Flamingo. Enjoy Delane was led.
Well, Jane, it did sound very dramatic. What was it like from your vantage point?
Oh, from start to finish, there were things happening. Horses falling, slipping up, pulling up. Everything was happening. You had to keep your eyes peeled. But the common denominator was the first two home, Lord Lariat in front of the stalls. They were prominent through the run for the entire race. Paddy O'Hanlon is a 7-pound claiming jockey, which means he claimed 7 because of inexperience. He's quite a local rider here from Screen, and he was not found wanting at all. He was always in a prominent position, making the running for much of it. But claiming 7 off 10 stone 5 meant he had bottom weight. He had real feather weight. And as I said, there was plenty of drama in behind. But I suppose the plaudits will have to go to Dermot McLaughlin. Back-to-back Irish Grand Nationals. Before I took this call, I had to go back in the history books to see who is the last trainer to do back-to-back Irish Grand Nationals. And it was Jim Draper in 1976 when he trained Brown Ladd to win back-to-back races. So not since 1976 has a trainer managed it. And Dermot doesn't have a huge yard of horses that we're usually used to talking about in these big results. Dermot has 30 or 40 horses in training, and now with 150-1 shot last year, okay, 40-1 this year, I'd still like to be on it. I wasn't on it. It was very, very drama, and that's exactly what the Irish Grand National is about. And do you know how much he costs as a 3-year-old horse? Free.
Go on.
€5,500.
Oh,
he
wow.
wins €500,000 today.
That's amazing.
Delivered again.
And he wasn't like Florian Porter bought on Facebook or anything like that, no?
No. Every race, every big race, you want these massive stories. That's what we had last year. But I suppose we had it in front of this barren landscape, this empty grandstand. And as much as we broadcasters try to make it exciting, it wasn't the same as today when he came back in. Tina Turner was blaring the best song. And it was magic, and it was great to have that feeling back, especially ahead of Punchestown next week. It really gets the pulse racing.
Yeah, and like as you outlined there, Jane, it's just when a horse wins and it has that amazing backstory, when people like Paddy O'Hanlon, who said he was only delighted to have even got a ride today, and Dermot McLaughlin, a local trainer, obviously did it last year, but nobody expects, as the stats tell us, for him to be able to do it again 2 years in a row.
Yeah, it kind of gives us all a bit of hope, doesn't it? No matter what you do, whether you're, you know, Kerry playing hurling in the football or, you know, in the All-Ireland final, like, so unlikely, like, but it can happen. These things can happen against all the odds. And I think if you face the starter in a race like the Grand National, you have a chance. The favourite, a lot of the favourite around a great race, Guy Ard and Meneal, to finish third, but a lot of fancied horses were out of the race early. Mount Ida slipped up a couple of different horses. They were never really involved, Schoolboy Hours being one of them. So it's a race that really gives us all a little bit of hope that we can be competitive no matter what your recent form, no matter what your starting price. You face the starter, you have a chance.
Yeah, because when you're looking at, you know, who came in next, then Gordon Elliott, who had 10 horses running frontal assault, only managed to come second despite leading for much of the race. And then the favourite, Galliard du Mesnil, Willie Mullins is training that horse, finishing third. So, I mean, like, racing against the big boys there.
Yeah, and that's what you have to do. When there is that prize money on offer, of course, all of the best yards are going to be trying to win it. And in fourth place is Screaming Colours for Bill Durkin, the, again, small outfit. Fifth, Joseph O'Brien, who also had a winner. But we know Joseph, like Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott, massive yards. So I think a lot of us were shouting for the underdog, and that was Lord Lariat. Coming down to two out, it looked like it might go to the favourite, Gaillard and Meneal. I think maybe the weight got the better of him because he was carrying more than a stone, more than the eventual winner. But yeah, it just gives us, like, we want these stories, we want these different characters, we want these different faces, and dreams came true today, and that is what we want in the Irish Grand National.
Yeah, it really is. Rachel Blackmore probably be a little bit disappointed still chasing that Irish Grand National win.
She might be, but, you know, there was no hard luck stories from her perspective. Full-time score, despite his inexperience, he ran a lovely race, he jumped really well. She didn't get brought down or she didn't get impeded. It was very much a fair result, so she can't feel, you know, too disappointed. But she'll have to roll the dice again. But that's not just her. There are plenty of riders in here. Davy Russell was chasing his first Irish Grand National, still eludes him, and he slipped up on Mount Ida, as I mentioned. Franco Depor, the top weight, never really got involved. Fireclaw came down. Death Duty was banged there off. You go, never really landed the blow. Mark Walter, the choice of all of JP McManus's runners, he never got involved in 10-10. And JP had 8 runners in the race and he had nothing in the first 4. The best he could do was 5th.
Right, well, Jane Mangan motivating us all for sure. So look, this runs nicely into Punchestown. Did we learn anything today or over the last few days at Fairy House that we can take into Punchestown?
Well, we learned, aside from Fairy House, that Constitution Hill is not going to face Honeysuckle, that she's going to have an easier task as Nicky Henderson's charge is not going to come across the water. We did learn that...
Hang on a second, Jane. What do you think, like, as somebody who, as you said, as a broadcaster who likes to, you know, let the people know what's involved in racing and, you know, adding a bit of colour to things, when you know now that a match like that isn't going to happen by choice, is it frustrating?
To a certain extent it is, but if I'm honest, I would have never have thought the match was possible, only that the owner of Constitution Hill, Michael Buckley, said it on an interview that he was thinking that it might happen. Because I would never have thought a novice, so basically an underage player, you know, facing into open company, you know, championship match, I would have always thought that he would do it next year in open company outside of his novice campaign as an older horse. So maybe it's just frustrating because they kind of planted the seed and we all ran with the idea that this could be amazing. Paddy Power put up €100,000 of a bonus if he did win, and then it's just been like, you know, cold water thrown over the flame.
So it was like a carrot there for ages and then they just took it away.
It was just dangling for absolutely no reason, as it transpired, but it got us all talking for a while. There's much more to the Punchestown Festival than that. I'm excited to see Clan de Zabot come back to try and, you know, defend his crown. Will we see Manila Indo or Apu Tar there? Let's see if Album Photo or what William Mullins lines up in the Gold Cup, and the novices back again. Of course, we had Gallop and Deschamps here yesterday. We're not going to have him at Punchestown, but we could have an Argumine in the Champion Chase. And Shaq and Persois, wouldn't that be a nice matchup? Because they never really clashed at Cheltenham. Shaq and Persois, of course, falling before the race really got started.
So over the last few days, what was your highlight, Jane?
It has to be Lord Lariat. I, you know, from my own perspective, I know people who have horses, and sometimes you can feel a little bit disillusioned when Winnie Mullins has 10 winners at Cheltenham and he might have 10 winners next week. And, you know, when you see a horse that's so inexpensively bought, ridden by a £7 claimer, trained by a guy who has not hundreds of horses, I think that's a magic result.
And Jane, just I saw yourself went to visit Apple's Jade the other day.
I did last evening. I couldn't resist. I was staying up in Baxter Stud and I went for a walk around the foaling unit, and she has overdue her second foal, so she has a foal already on the ground, which is now a yearling, and she's due to foal. So she's in the foaling unit. They're keeping an eye on her. And you know who her stablemate is, Marie?
Go on, tell me.
Benny DeJo. You know, two queens of the turf.
So you were in your absolute element.
Yeah, well, I was always a massive Apple's Jade fan. As you know, I'm a huge Honeysuckle fan, but I thought she was really tough. And she's still got that sass about her. She is the definition of a diva. You know, in the pop world, you've got Mariah Carey and Madonna.
And in the racing world, you have Jane Mangan,
world,
yes.
Jane Mangan and Apple's Jade, you know. So I will take it. I'm in good company.
Okay, Jane, thank you so much for all of that. It did sound like it was a magnificent race and a very worthy winner there as well. Dermot McLaughlin coming up trumps with Lord Lariat to win the Grand National. We will check in with you later in the week. Enjoy the evening, Jane. Thank you so much.
RTE 2FM. Game on.
On 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back on this Bank Holiday Monday. I'm Marie Creo, and we are now turning our attention to Gaelic football. I'm delighted to say that former Sligo footballer Neil Ewing joins us on the line. Neil, the headlines after the weekend: escape from New York, Sligo just edge out Exiles.
Yeah, Marie, how are things? Very happy Sligo man here. Great to see that result coming through late last night. Not the usual time you're keeping an eye out for a championship result to come through. But yeah, listen, the Sligo lads will be delighted. You know, it was a very tight game. But I think Sligo got a scare yesterday. But, you know, I think right back to 2010, Galway got a proper scare over there. Leitrim got a scare there, 2018, went to extra time. Roscommon had a scare there, 2016. So, you know, it's never an easy game. And above all years this year, you really didn't know what you were going to be facing with New York. You know, they usually tried to get a challenge game or two in against maybe an inter-county team in advance. I think this year they only managed to play Salt and Lochnacara, who were over on a trip for St. Patrick's again. So quite different preparation. But yeah, Sligo, be delighted to get the win. It's a real banana skin. It's a no-win situation for the team travelling over there. Look forward to Roscommon now in 2 weeks' time. I think for New York, what was really encouraging for them is to see the amount of homegrown players that they're starting to include in their teams. And, you know, I think that feeds nicely into the Talchin Cup for them this year. It's the first time they'll ever have got a second chance in the championship. And the fact that they have some homegrown lads and they can start to build something year on year is very encouraging for them, rather than maybe a situation where they're reliant on lads that were maybe passing through for the summer.
Yeah, and I suppose it's getting that mix, really, because I think it's nice as well to have those big name players too, that you're kind of looking at. You're looking at match reports and you're looking at the teams lining out, and you're seeing the likes of Johnny Glenn or Adrian Farley, and, you know, they draw your interest as well, because you want to know how they're getting on in football, but you also want to know why they're over in New York. So there are stories as well that drag you in when players like that are involved.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that is true as well. I think it's just striking the balance. And I think, you know, from my own perspective, maybe previously I thought in years gone by, maybe the balance was too weighing too heavily in favour of the lads who were just over for a summer, just over for a year or two. Definitely, I think, you know, to grow the game there, you know, they need some guys for all the others to look up to. And the big one or two or three maybe big names is brilliant to have. And as you said there, Johnny Glynn, an All-Ireland hurling winner. Adrian Varley has, you know, played in Division 1 League Finals for Galway. And I think, interestingly enough, yesterday, Munster Hurling Championship started, but we had Mark Ennis, the former Cork hurler, in action in Gaelic Park for New York. So definitely, there's always some great stories there. So yeah, no, let's hope New York can build on that performance as well. It's going to be very interesting to see who they pull out in the draw, because normally, obviously, with the Connacht Championship, it's on a five-year rotation between the five Connacht counties, so they know well in advance who they're going to be playing. So I'm sure there's going to be a bit of excitement and a bit of a buzz for the draw for the Talton Cup for the New York guys now.
So what about Sligo then? Obviously, they have a game coming up, but like as you said, it feels like every time a county goes away that it's always tight, at least for periods. And then when it is tight, the headlines always seem to reflect that moment when it was tight, and they do put a spin on it. But for a team like Sligo to go over there, and even just to get a win in championships, sometimes it doesn't matter who it's against once it's a win.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yes, listen, it's a different sort of championship experience heading over to New York. You know, playing Gaelic Park, you have the AstroTurf surface. It's really a very different experience to what you're used to in terms of Connacht Championship here. But yeah, brilliant for the lads. I think, you know, there's a lot of good work going on. Tony McEntee has brought a lot of new faces into the panel. And, you know, sometimes when you're trying to encourage these young lads to do the right thing and, you know, to tick all the boxes in terms of the work they need to do, I suppose, on the training pitch, but away from the training pitch as well, it's very hard to do that long term if there's no results. So, you know, getting a win yesterday will increase the buy-in there. And then Roscommon to Colman Markovich Park in 2 weeks' time, you know, there's no better carrot really for a Sligo footballer. You know, there's been some huge Sligo Roscommon games in Markovich Park over the years. I even remember back to probably one that inspired me in my youth was a great game where Shane Curran was kicking frees from the sideline. And there's been some great occasions. So you'd hope that Tony and his backroom team can get the Sligo lads organised to really dig in 2 weeks' time against Roscommon. And I think, obviously, division probably a little bit of a mixed division four for Sligo, but they'll really be looking to set themselves up in a way where they can bring that game into the melting pot with, you know, maybe 10 or 15 minutes to go, and hopefully have a big Sligo crowd in Markovich Park and see where they can go then down the home stretch. You know, probably last year they played Mayo, Markovich Park. Unfortunately, it was COVID affected, so we didn't have spectators there, or very limited spectators. So for a lot of these younger guys in the Sligo panel, it's going to be their first big home Connacht Championship game. So really exciting 2 weeks for them, I think. Probably encouraging for Sligo was to see the impact Conan Maron had when he came in off the bench, you know, for 10 minutes there, won a few important balls. Sean Carabine, I think he's probably one of Sligo's most important players at the minute. He's a really outstanding young footballer. He's probably playing midfield or around the middle for us now, and the reason for that is we could probably do with three or four Sean Carabines, you know, one in the half back line, one midfield, one in the half forward line. He's an outstanding footballer. I hope any injury he might have picked up yesterday isn't too serious, and we have him flying fit, as well as a few of the lads who didn't make the 26 yesterday for Roscommon. No.
And Pat Spillane, we saw he made his debut as well, Pat Spillane Jr. with his father commentating, which was quite a nice moment. But I've seen Pat Jr. in the club championship here in Dublin and was really impressive for St. Jude's. Obviously, Sligo isn't his original home county, but has the family connections there, and it's a huge commitment. And probably just shows how much he wants it and how dedicated he is, the fact that he's living in Dublin, playing for Sligo, obviously doing all the training and fully committed to being an inter-county player with you.
Yeah, I think we have to be honest. Any football that Pat Spillane Jr. has, he's definitely got it from his Sligo mum. That's the only place he could have got it, I think. Brilliant to see Pat involved with Sligo. Obviously, huge effort. I know somebody said as well that he doesn't drive, which probably even adds to the complexity of a curry man in Dublin trying to get to Sligo for training. Now, maybe that's changed in the last few months, but great to see him putting in the effort with Sligo. And I know he probably had an injury or picked up an injury during the league. So yeah, to see him coming on yesterday, maybe with not a lot of game time or training behind him, and having an impact there in getting Sligo over the line. And, you know, even for the likes of Pat, a trip away like that, you know, the guys would have travelled over Thursday, probably travel back tomorrow. You know, it really gets them involved in the setup too. So, you know, this is it's a journey Sligo are on, and you know, hopefully Pat's going to stay involved, for the next 4 to 5 years, and you know, really bring something to help push Sligo forward.
And also, if Sligo were to go and win an under-20 final, Connacht's final would only probably just add to the momentum that's in the county. If you win a championship game against New York, it's obviously still only York, but still heading into the Roscommon game, and if you could add that to the trophy cabinet along the way, it wouldn't be a bad place to be.
Yeah, no, that'll make for a good 7 to 10 days in Sligo football. Obviously, we had a good win over Roscommon in the under-20 championship last weekend. Get a win in the senior championship, or last Wednesday we beat Roscommon in the under-20. Get a win in the senior championship at the weekend. And yeah, we have Mayo coming down to us. Rightly so, there was a bit of... let's just say confusion over the venue, but no, the game is rightfully taking place in Sligo now, as should always have been the case. And again, Desi Sloane, Con O'Mara, Eamon O'Hara, Paul Higgins put huge effort into that under-21 team. You know, they haven't had, no more than anyone else around the country, haven't had a straightforward run at it because of COVID and things like that over the last 2 years. So, yeah, a big excitement in the county for that game Wednesday evening. And as you say, just building that bit of momentum. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we won a minor championship last weekend. So there's a lot of good news stories in Sligo football. And I think it's also worth calling out. I know Paul McDade and Ronan Carter with their bars in Manhattan looked after the Sligo crowd very well over the weekend, and even helped out with a fundraiser for Sligo GA, which went very successfully. So fair play to the lads. And yeah, that, you know, that all those little things add to the momentum, and trying to get more people involved and behind the team and get the crowds back to the Sligo games.
Yep, all very important. We were talking about great escapes and teams travelling in championship, and Leitrim had one of their own this weekend, as our last weekend against London, defeating them 3-12 to 2-11. But again, like another really, really tight encounter and just lots of drama too.
Yeah, Leitrim have probably specialised getting out in these tight escapes. I know, was it maybe the last time they were over in London, one of their subs came on and kicked a few very important scores for them to get them over the line as well. Listen, London beat Leitrim during the league, so you know, if you were to look at it in terms of their last meeting, this was always going to be a very, very tight game. Roy Slip is, you know, since they've redeveloped Roy Slip, well, maybe 4 years ago, it's probably a different place to go to. I remember we were there in 2013, and the pitch was an interesting pitch at the time, very a few undulations, you could say. But no, it's a really fine facility now, and again, similar to New York, and London are probably a few years ahead of New York on this. You know, a real focus on the homegrown lads in London, which, you know, as we said, great to get the lads over, and important to have a few higher profile guys involved with the team. But for London and New York going forward, if they can increase the number of homegrown players they have, and you know, that's true growth of the game in those Irish communities inland, London and New York, which is brilliant. But I think, you know, for them to have success, it can't just be build a team for a year, maybe 2 years at the most, then try to build a new team. You know, they need to just slowly add to this with some homegrown players. And unfortunately for them yesterday, probably, you know, Ryan O'Rourke, he's a very talented footballer. You know, I think he's had quite an impact for NUI Maynooth in Sigerson over previous years as well. You know, he did a bit of damage for Leitrim, and you know, probably just that little bit of class was able to get them over the line in the end.
Yeah, Tyrone off the mark as well. So the All-Ireland champions defeated Fermanagh 217 to 210. Took them a while to get going though, but that nearly seems to be the story of Tyrone this year.
Yeah, you know, I was actually just going to say, you know, if ever a game reflected a team's season, it's probably what happened on Saturday evening in Enniskillen. Tricky one for Tyrone. You know, Fermanagh, a county I always admire, like, they always get the absolute best out of themselves. You know, they have Kieran Donnelly in there as manager. I know the players would have a lot of time for him, very highly regarded, and they're always very well set up. Tyrone, you know, there's been a lot of noise around in the last few weeks in terms of guys leaving the panel. Some of these guys left the panel months ago, but you know, when in another maybe one or two go in the last number of weeks coming up the championship, it just maybe makes a bigger story out of it than maybe it is within the panel itself. I think the interesting thing for Tyrone is that, you know, they've lost Peter Hart and Matty Donnelly to injuries in the last few weeks on top of, well, injuries and illness, I think appendicitis maybe, in Peter Hart's case. And, you know, on top of the guys they've lost from the panel, that's probably a much bigger blow than it would have been last year. So they'll definitely be hoping that Conor McKenna, who unfortunately seen a red card after the final whistle, is back for the game against Derry, because he had a huge impact when he came off the bench. You know, I think it was very interesting to hear Fergal Logan afterwards. I think maybe Conor McKenna's offence may have been, inverted commas, adding to a melee, but I think Fergal Logan had turned that in his head and said he was looking out for the safety of his teammates. So I think he was maybe laying the foundations for a few late nights or maybe appeals over the coming weeks to have Conor McKenna on the pitch against Derry. But, you know, I suppose outside of that, encouraging for Tyrone to see Conor Myler pop up with the goal and, you know, return to that form that seen him, you know, win player of the year last year. And then, Derry and Tyrone in a few weeks' time, that's a tantalising game in terms of, well, maybe not for those looking for free-flowing football, but definitely I think it's going to be a cagey and very, very interesting battle to see what Rory Gallagher comes up to see. Can he dethrone the neighbours and the All-Ireland champions?
Yeah, well, I think if anybody can frustrate them, it's probably the right word to use, it will be Rory Gallagher for sure. But just in terms of Tyrone, and look, there's a lot of comparisons to Limerick. Obviously, it took them a little while to get going. And then, of course, when the championship comes, they were able to turn it on, as we saw over the weekend. But it does feel like it's a little bit different for Tyrone because of the players that have not stepped away, but the players that are missing. And when you're missing one or two absolutely huge players like that, it can make such a big difference. And it just feels like if they had all of their players playing and fully fit and available, that they'd be a different outfit and you'd be able to compare them to Limerick a little bit more.
That's very true, Marie. And I suppose Limerick do have the added advantage in hurling that, you know, the Munster Championships are round robin. You know, three out of five teams are going to go through. The Ulster Championship is the exact opposite of that. It's a complete bear pit. You know, you struggle over Fermanagh yesterday, who will probably be regarded as, one of the weaker teams in Ulster. And then you have Derry coming right at you. And, you know, the Ulster Championship is not where you want to be tiptoeing around and finding your form. But, you know, Tyrone have proved to us last year just what they can do from what would seem a low base. You know, was it five goals they conceded against Kerry just a number of weeks before championship last year? They went on to win an All-Ireland championship. And I think Tyrone are that type of team, and I think I might have said it before, that if they ended up in a back door, it won't necessarily bother them. They're maybe just that extra game through a back door, they could build momentum. The one thing they probably need to look out for this year is the back door is going to be a little bit more loaded, because you don't have those teams that are going into the Tailteann Cup. You could come up against a stronger team a little bit earlier in a back door run. But, you know, I think they'll be putting a lot of focus on maybe getting Conor McKenna on the pitch, getting Kieran McGeary maybe back into a little bit of form. I know he went off the last day, and it's just going to be interesting to see where Peter Hart and Matty Donnelly are with those injuries coming up to the Derry game. Listen, maybe it sounds silly, but no matter what 15 Tyrone Derry put on the pitch the next day, it's going to be a very, very tight game. I think they could both be missing five or six starters. Just the type of game it's going to be. It's just going to be one you're going to try and get through any way you can and assess where you are after that. And it's definitely an intriguing battle on that side of the draw in Ulster.
Yeah, for sure. Neil Ewing, thank you so much for joining us. We will chat to you very, very soon. It's time now to turn our attention to rugby, and I'm delighted to say that Shane Byrne is with us here on the line. Shane, we know now who will be in the quarterfinals for the European Champions Cup. So the ones that we'll be mostly interested in are Leicester v Leinster and Munster v Toulouse. But we had a weekend of action and it didn't go the way a lot of people expected. Let's start with Friday night and Connacht and Leinster. And I guess, look, that was the game that everybody thought that Leinster would move through the gears, and they did, and were so impressive.
Yeah, absolutely ruthless, I would have said, Marie.
Good word, yeah.
They just tore into it. It took a bit of time to get themselves going, but when they did, they just moved through the gears. It was really impressive stuff. Now, Connacht, in fairness, should be angry with the way the defence went. It was quite leaky, but the way that Leinster just went through the moves, any sort of weakness at all that Connacht showed, they absolutely exploited it. So many players coming into fantastic form, and, you know, all at the right time, at the right stage of the season. Like, Leinster now, there's obviously whispers that they're putting them at favourites, even though they are away. in the quarterfinals, but you couldn't argue much against it. They were very, very impressive. And that attacking style that they have, nearly all the decisions that they're saying, the front door, back door, every decision was exactly where it should be. And all the players joined in, and, you know, forwards and backs able to deliver the same thing with ball in hands. So impressive to watch.
Yeah, they really were. And, you know, it still feels like there's more in them, and which is a good time to be saying that because of the stages of the competition. But with just people coming back to fitness and, you know, even just the way the decisions they made, they were improving. They improved so much from that first game to that second game against Connacht.
Didn't they? They really did. Now, and in fairness now, just a word for Connacht, is yeah. because the way they played in the first game, there was no sign of that in the second game, which was a shame to see. It really was. Andy Friend, I know, was very annoyed after the game. You could tell from his interviews that he wasn't impressed with the way they had played. But in fairness, you've got to hand it that they were playing against a side in absolutely superb form. But that attacking style that they had themselves was almost non-existent. I know they did cross the line. They did get going on the scoreboard, but their defence was so leaky. It really was, you know, an awful shame for Connacht rugby. It's something that they didn't need to happen. But looking on Leinster, the pack were just absolutely immense. They dominated ball possession. All the stats went completely their way. And every single time the back line got the ball, they just seemed to be able to get over the gain line and make breaks. It was, you know, superb to see.
Yeah, it really was. And no doubt Andy Friend will have, look, he's frustrated. You can tell that, all right. Leo Cullen, on the other hand, will be delighted because he'll know that there's still work to be done. But the person that I'm thinking about all weekend is Dan McFarland and Ulster, and how difficult it'll be for him to try and deal with their loss to Toulouse, because they were in such a strong position going into the game. But I got a bit of a chuckle from his quote today. He said, "We'll have a beer, be grumpy and get over it." And that's about all you can do, really, isn't it?
Oh, listen, they let that go. They really did. Okay, there's a couple of things. The red card was... you know, very, very pivotal. Tom O'Toole, it's just one of those things. Guys are going for the physical opposition, you know, physical tackle. They're just standing their ground almost, but they can't do it. You've got to change the tackle technique. You've got to dip. So there was no doubt in the current way the game is ref, definite red card, and it really did have a huge effect on the game. Now, there's a couple of things you have to say. Intermac and DuPont were just outrageous.
Yeah.
You know, they really changed the game. And you could almost see whenever something went Ulster's way, Ulster got the lead several times in the game. But every single time there was a massive, massive response from Toulouse. It was an amazing result for Ulster. And the way they played the week before was absolutely superb. But there was something lacking. And maybe just that red card was the difference between the two teams. 1 point, like, how cruel was that? And DuPont scoring, what, with 4 minutes mm-hmm. to go on the clock. You know, such a hard way to go. You know, Ulster will rue. They had a couple of chances in the first round. Might have been able to push that score a little bit further, that Toulouse wouldn't have been able to bridge that gap. But Toulouse reigning champions, you know, they really did exactly what they needed right down to the last penny.
Yeah, that's it, like 50-49 between them over the two legs. 11 tries, 62 turnovers, 2 red cards, 2 yellows, and like just they had everything between the two teams, really. They gave us everything, and you just nearly felt that heading into it, that Ulster, it was like they just didn't want to lose as opposed went Correct. To try and win, which is a really difficult mindset to be in. But when you're playing against somebody like Toulouse and everyone is clapping you on the back for this amazing win and you have to go and play them again in such a short space of time, it's really hard to turn that around in your head.
Yeah, I think you've got it there and won. I think because they went away and had such an amazing performance, they obviously went over there. Well, not obviously, they did. They went over there with an incredible mindset just to give it a go, not to take a step back and just to go every chance that they got, they went for it. And they didn't do that in Belfast. It was like they were at home. They were just going to nurse through the gap in the scoreboard and just make sure that everything works out. And to play against a team like Toulouse with the halfback pairing playing as they did, like so many other players, but the halfback pairing I thought were just outrageous. The Ulster needed to keep that foot on the pedal, pushing hard. You know, and they did. There were some fantastic phases of play in it. There was absolutely no doubt about that, but they just came up short because you're right, they just didn't go out the way they did when they were down in France.
Mm-hmm. So what does this mean for Munster, do you think, that performance that we saw Toulouse put in? They are going to have to play them in the Aviva Stadium, but they're going to take a huge amount from that win over Exeter because it was one of those dogged wins when, you know, their big players stepped up, their Peter Armanis and Joey Carberry's, you know, the old reliables. It was great to see Joey have a good performance as well.
Wasn't it? Now, that really was something that I don't think there was anyone in Irish rugby that was upset to see that happening. Joey Carberry played fantastic. He really was a leader on the park, something that you wanted him to be for so much toward in the last season and a bit. And it just hasn't been able. He hasn't been able to find that form. But what a performance! An absolutely classic. We always do it, and it's a definition of Munster performance down in Thomond Park. The crowd being the 16th man, it had all the ingredients that they wanted. And yet Peter O'Mahony is just absolutely outrageous. He was fantastic. His turnovers in particular were very, very timely. Their whole back row, Hognett and O'Donoghue, were superb. And that's exactly what you needed. A few moments of genius from Zeebo, who was nearly a passenger throughout the game. And they just, you know, Exeter would have come over there full of confidence. There wasn't much in the difference. They would have thought that they'd be able to bridge that gap, and it wasn't to be. Munster just, you know, they refused to step back, and they just kept going every opportunity that they got, they took. And when Joey Carberry was in the form that he was, even got a try himself, you know, that's exactly when Munster are absolutely lethal to any team that goes down there, particularly in Europe. You know, obviously there's a big debate now. They're heading up to the Aviva.
Yeah.
You know, good old concerts taken. You know, you can understand the decision.
You can, yeah.
But what has to happen, though, is that the Munster support, instead of just going, okay, it's not Intomit, make the Aviva red.
Yeah.
You know, and just every single one of them get up there and make it the intimidating atmosphere that is Thomond Park on a day, make it there in the Aviva, because that's what they're going to need. Playing against Toulouse, it's a very hard draw, there's no doubt about it, but Ulster have shown that there is a way of beating them, that you can beat them when they're still playing reasonably well, because to lose by 1 point over a combination of two games, no matter what, there is going to be plenty of analysis that Munster will be able to do to find weaknesses in that Toulouse game, and also to nullify their strengths, which obviously centre around their halfback pairings, and particularly the little small scrum half, who is just absolutely such a player.
Yeah, and absolutely box office as well. So even if you're just a rugby fan in Dublin with maybe a tiny little bit of an affinity to any of the provinces, really, it's worth, like, you know, we're talking about going to see great sports stars. Like, there's an opportunity to go and see some great sports stars, no matter who you support, because it'll be an amazing show, really. But when you think as well the fact that, okay, they had over 21,000 in Thomond Park, they've had bigger crowds before, but it was 21,000 that really made their presence felt. You've Graham Rowntree now, like, officially going to be taken over as the boss. Do you think that things are going to maybe start moving in a direction for Munster? Like, I mean, they are at the quarterfinal stages of the European Cup. Are they going to get that push they need now to look, who knows what could happen really for the rest of the season?
Yeah, well, it was good that Rowntree, they finally just named it. It became like the, you know, when they finally announced it, it's like, oh, yeah, duh. You know, everybody knew by the time. But, you know, I think it's a good appointment. There's plenty of other people that they would have liked in a bigger name. Yes, he hasn't been, he hasn't had the experience as a head coach, but somebody has to make the step up at some point. But he's very popular.
Yeah.
And you can see that the appointment and stuff, he's very popular with the players. He has the players' ear, which is the main thing. And I think it's very important who he goes for in his backroom team. You'd love to see some of the Munster people being brought back. Mike Prendergast, there you go, couldn't say the name. You'd love to see people like that brought back into the fold, because there's so many guys, ex-Munster guys, who are making superb names for themselves, not in Munster, and it would be time to just bring some of them back. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. But, like, the good thing is that, you know, a lot of clubs would fall apart with this exodus that's happening of their senior staff, and this change in coaching, but it's not happening. Yeah. That team that played, you know, absolutely superbly against Exeter are a team who are playing for each other and playing for the jersey, which is all you can ask for as a team right now, who are supposed to be in transition. You know, it's great to see that. Obviously, round three, it's a hard place to be judged by, as he knows from the legacy he has with Leicester, that Munster, they want silverware. So most other clubs you go to, it's not, you know, it's not quite as strict as that, but all Munster want is silverware, so that's where they need to get to.
Yep, they have high standards, that's for sure. Shane Byrne, thank you as always. It was really enjoyable chatting to you. No doubt we'll be talking to you again soon. It's now time to talk hurling, and Niall Moran joins us on the line. Niall, before we get into the hurling, how are you feeling about all these Ed Sheeran concerts down your neck of the woods?
Super, great for us there. The pubs are flying out there. We were kind of hoping that Toulouse might come into Tomlin Park, into the Gaelic grounds to play us, because I think if they thought they were playing Limerick, I think they'd be a little bit more scared at the moment than against Munster.
Oh, Niall. So, ouch. After seeing them against Exeter now, they're really on the way up again, I think.
No, sorry, no, we're looking forward to it, but no, we've enough action to keep us entertained now without having to wait for it.
That's for sure. Look, it was a great weekend. Just brilliant to get it back going again. Now that it's here, I'm kind of just took like maybe a game or two to get into it and get to grips with the time of year and everything. But once the quality started to show, I really enjoyed the weekend of hurling. And look, there's so many talking points, but as you're a Limerick man, I think we should probably start with Limerick just because of the amount of speculation and discussion and narratives around the team and where they were at. Heading into this championship, just disappointing league campaign, and we're not used to views the words disappointing and Limerick in the same sentence because of all the success over the last few years. But it just felt like watching them against Cork, Niall, that when you reflect on the league, or when I reflect on the league, you have to think that they were training really, really hard during that league. And we saw a team that were being put through their paces during the week, the days that we didn't see, and that by now they just have timed it right and they're coming into their own once again.
Yeah, definitely, and I don't think Allianz are going to be sending Don Kiely and co any Christmas cards, because as of yesterday they made a complete mock of the league and probably made a complete mockery of their form. Really, I suppose, Marie, like, the one thing here is like they had a huge move yesterday and Kyle Hayes going to the full forward line, and it's safe to say I don't think anybody in Limerick even knew it. And again, I suppose, look, for me personally, I know, even knowing a lot of the lads, whatever else, I don't probe them for information in terms of training, whatever else. But I suppose, look, when you see the energy that they brought yesterday, and again, there had been rumours that they had been doing tough training prior to the league, and sometimes you take those rumours with a pinch of salt, but when you see the energy of, you know, like Sigurd, Dermot Burns, all these guys yesterday, it was incredible. Was it as good a performance as the All-Ireland final last year? That'll remain to be seen, but most definitely Cork were so, so disappointing. And I just probably qualify myself, Marie, I actually happened to be in Wadge Park yesterday to see not on a spying mission yet, but no, just even watching them on television, or watching them outside the clubhouse, and we kind of, the Waterford crowd were fairly vocal at the start of the game, and they kind of quietened down, the sing-song started quieting down after the second goal. So I think Waterford kind of got an eye-opener too as to what the enormous task that they'll have to turn Limerick over the coming months as well.
Yeah, it definitely felt like one of those moments where, you know, everything became clear and we understood what had been going on for the last few months, and all credit to them as well. Like, Limerick were phenomenal yesterday, even though it's difficult to watch them. You know, we can see why they're so successful, and they've so many brilliant players, and they do all the simple things right. They know exactly what they're doing, and you can only kind of look on and you know, hope that other teams will catch up. But the one thing that really struck me, and it's something that people talk about, the experts talk about all the time, is the work rate. And I'm looking at the Limerick forwards and the backs and the middle field, the midfield and everything, and, you know, we're talking about how hard everybody's working. Why can't other teams work as hard as them, Niall?
I suppose, look, physically, these guys are, like, physically, they're monsters, but you've got to realise that we're very fortunate in Limerick that there's been a very good system of, I suppose, S&C as well as coaching in place. Through a variety of factors over a number of years, and it takes a lot of time to get to that level. And I suppose, like, the continuity, the quality of people that they've had from over the last, even looking at the S&C trainers, like, they've gone from Joe O'Connor to Mikey Kiley, who's now with Ulster Rugby, and now back to Carvalhar Carnon, who was with Tipperary when they won their All-Ireland. So, like, the experience in the backroom team there at Limerick, and to be honest, it was as close to horse racing as you could imagine, in the sense that a Coolmore job whereby you the horse has been pulled for the whole league, but again, you just had to trust that the people over them had them in immaculate shape. But the one thing, like, even just the body language, like, what greets their tackles, their turnovers, it's quite obvious that is what... That drives them, like, that winning their own ball, winning their own possession. And even though probably their game plan is based on kind of maintaining possession and taking possession in the right places and whatever else, I really think when you look at that, Mike Casey's interception there at the very, very end, that ultimately is what they judge each other on. And it's not even what they're judged on, it's what they judge each other on, and their standards are enormous. And, like, again, at yesterday's pitch, there's only one team that could possibly come to that level. But then again, that was yesterday, and the All-Ireland wasn't won yesterday. And I think we have to bear that in mind. If this is a league, to win an All-Ireland this year, you're going to have to win at least seven games. You're going to have to play seven games. And, like, a lot can happen over the course of that amount of games.
So what about Cork then? We're looking at the problems that were there at the All-Ireland final, and they don't seem to have fixed too many of them. Why do they struggle so much, Niall, do you think?
It's hard, Marie. Right? Okay, and again, like, we're the group that we played with in Limerick, we're just getting beaten like that, and there's such a frustration. And like, I felt sorry for them to get up this morning out of bed, because they would probably feel within themselves maybe a sense of shame. And like, that's not really fair in that sense. But I think maybe looking at them, like, as the game wore on, it was obvious that Limerick had spooked them again, and I suppose especially the concession, that second goal. But looking at it, and so look from a limited experience that we'd have in terms of dealing with teams, sometimes when you try to overthink looking for a solution, you actually make the problem bigger than what it is, and you actually get tied up in knots. And looking at what the Cork backs are trying to do, coming out with the ball, like, holding on to it, going forward, going back, like, the criticism that I would have had of them in the National League was, there were two, they're coming across the lines the whole time in terms of attacking, just over killing the ball. And, like, who in the earthly world goes up the middle to take on Limerick? Like, you don't. Like, they're going against all of what they're best at. And, John, maybe the thing isn't over for me yet. If they just go back, if they went back to a very, very simple game, just simple game, cut out all this bullcrap, and maybe just go back to doing what they're best at and trust their natural ability, because they have natural ability, and maybe go and pick their best team. And that's, they're going to have to dismantle number six. Six has to change for them. And if they got that right, and Clare did it in 2013, if you get that right, things can turn very, very quickly.
Yeah, what about Waterford, though? Are Waterford still the team to beat them, do you think? Obviously, the first half was a bit of a disappointment. I think it was probably explained quite well by Liam Cahill afterwards, just that weight of expectation and the pressure. And when all that is on top of you, the decision-making sometimes takes a little bit longer than usual. But once they made those changes at halftime and settled, things started to move in the direction that they wanted it to. But do you think that they've shown enough that they would be able to challenge a team like Limerick? We will find out very shortly, obviously.
Definitely. Looking at them in the warm-up, looking at them throughout, I think emotionally, I don't think they're fully 100% invested. And given the nature of the league, again, like, you can't emotionally invest yourself to the fullest every day. And look, at the start of the game yesterday, they went 4 points up. They were cruising. They were physically on another level. And then a poor mistake by Conor Crunty, and all of a sudden, the dynamic shifted. And that kind of replayed itself in the second half. And look, you'd have to give credit to Chip. With everything, really, there was such a great atmosphere in Walsh Park yesterday. Like, do you know what I mean? There was only, 11,000 people there, but my God, it was massive, the vocal nature of the supporters, etc. But I honestly think that Waterford, they're very, very close to something, but I'm going to go on record as saying Stephen O'Keefe could be the missing part of the jigsaw for them. And again, like, Sean O'Brien, very, very good goalkeeper, pulled off two very good saves, but again, I think his distribution and puck outs as they go forward is going to be targeted by the likes of Limerick and Galway, teams who are capable of turning them over. And I do think Stephen O'Keefe is a guy that they could need back 40 years out to get over the line.
What about Tipperary, though? Do we still think they're in transition, or are they out the other side of that now?
I'd be worried from the next day, and maybe I'm probably quite different to the Tipperary guys. I thought they came with so much yesterday. And, like, really, John, you have to give credit to a couple of newcomers there as well. Like, you know what I mean? Craig Morgan, I thought he was excellent there. And, you know, Mark Keogh got two goals, covered himself in glory. But I think they invested an awful lot there yesterday, and they'll be very, very disappointed. The nature of their wides, like, Waterford hit wides as well, but the nature of tips were cruel to look at. And, like, they have Tipperary coming into Thurles. next week, and that to me is a major, major game, and I'm not so sure that emotionally the Tip will recover in time for that.
Yeah, they do come thick and fast. Wexford and Galway playing out a draw. I'm not sure either side will really be happy after that. Henry Shefflin was clearly very, very frustrated. But yeah, a difficult day. And I think Wexford's performance as well does need a lot of work.
Yeah, I suppose the game probably was reflective of the build-up to the game. Really, a Leinster Championship like with two heavyweights like Galway and Wexford, like having a game like that half four of a Saturday damp day, I really think it probably belittled the Leinster Championship, and like Munster has really got a head start on it already as a result of that. In terms of the game, like Henry obviously tail of two halves. First half were excellent, but just the nature of their wides again, like, you know, they hit 10 wides in the first half and they completely dominant. And then second half, like when you leave a team like Wexford in the game, and I suppose look, a couple of hometown decisions starting to go their way. Galway looked very, very well organised. There was a lot to really like about Galway. And again, I think if they can keep their team fully fit, I know Conor Whelan now has become an injury worry. Like, they do have forwards that can hurt you. And even there, looking at them yesterday, like Spice Callan, I mean, like, he didn't kill the scoreboard, which he's capable of. You know what I mean? Conor Tooney didn't kill the scoreboard from play. So, like, when those guys can catch fire, which they very well could in the next 3 or 4 weeks, they will take a lot of stopping. And I know people are building, actually Kenny up probably is the better of the teams in Leinster, but I think that Galway team physically are the best position to challenge out of Leinster.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some interesting encounters in Leinster over the next while. I don't think we fully got to grips with where everybody's at yet, just in terms of Dublin and Kilkenny and Wexford and Galway and Laois, of course, as well, and Westmeath. I mentioned them all now, but especially the top teams, I think there's still a lot of hurling to be played and a lot to be figured out. And no doubt, Niall will be figuring out over the next little while. Thank you so much for joining us.
RTE
2FM.
On
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.
Now, welcome back to Game On. There is 8 minutes left in the show and it is time to join our roving reporter, Alan Colley, who is live at the showgrounds for the meeting of Sligo and Finn Harps. Alan.
Marie, I'm even further afield. I'm more of a roving reporter than the intro even suggests. I'm in Ballybuffet.
Oh, wow. I thought you were at home in Sligo.
Well, I was at home in Sligo for the weekend, but I'm down here for the game. Obviously, the team, Finn Harps, Sligo. It's half-time at the moment. We kicked off at 6 o'clock. It's not the greatest game I've ever seen, to be honest with you. But Sligo Rovers are winning 1-0 at half-time. They've credited the goal with O'Sullivan. For me, it looked like it may have been an OG as well. But Sligo are well on top, only for Mark McGinley in the Finn Harps goal. They probably should be 3 or 4 up at half-time, Sligo Rovers.
Well, not a bad job, Ali. We might keep you now as our roving reporter. You're doing well. I'd imagine, just given the recent run of form in Sligo, that a win is much needed, Alan.
Yeah, exactly. I mentioned there that the game not being the best, but I don't think anyone will care once they get the result, Marie, because if you look at the last 4 games, they've only picked up one point in 12, which is really, really bad return when you consider the start that they got off as well. The first 3 or 4 games, I think they had 10, 11 points on the board. So they've gone through a real slump in form, as I say, the last 4 or 5 matches. So they're not really bothered, I'd say, how to pick up the points today once they get the 3 points. But they are well on top at half-time. Liam Buckley would be much happier out of the two managers. Ollie Horgan is not one bit pleased over on the far side there with the Finn Harps performance. But it's still only 1-0 at this stage. So I'd expect Finn Harps to improve in the second half. But Liam Buckley will be happy with how things have gone so far.
Okay, well, let's join Tony O'Donoghue now, who is live in Talla Stadium for the meeting of Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk. Tony, how are things shaping up in Talla?
Fantastic evening. The east stand bathed in sunshine, so mostly Dundalk fans over there. Shadow here in the main stand, but a super game in prospect. It's funny, Alan has got all the Finn Harps bingo already, hasn't he, our roving reporter? Ollie Horgan will not be pleased. When is the last time Ollie Horgan was pleased? even when he wins away, he still go, well, we'll still struggle to stay in this league, you know?
If he just plays, presses play on the tape year after year after year.
Tony, he definitely won't be pulling the wool over anyone's eyes tonight if he's trying to say that they should have come out of the game with something, because they've been absolutely desperate so far.
What were you listening to on the road on the way up to Ballybuffet?
I saw you again. Well, I don't know, you were analysing Shamrock Rovers playlist, Tony, and you were asking for some band that I never heard of in my life. So
Orchestral Manoeuvres in the Dark, and Enola Gay has been played. in fairness, that was a song they always played here, OMD, and they used to kind of make a chant about it. So looking at their playlist and not seeing OMD on it was a bit of a disgrace. So they sorted it for me. So Enola Gay was played, so that's all good.
That's the influence you have, Tony. They've even sorted that for you.
Priorities, priorities.
It was Aaron Green, I think, they were... They were managing to eulogise with the Enola Gay lyrics. But anyway, here tonight at second against third, of course. Rovers just 3 points behind Derry City, and they face Drogheda a little later on this evening. This is a 7 o'clock kickoff here. So actually, the champions Rovers could, on goal difference, go top again this evening for 45 minutes at least, depending on how results go. And, you know, there's a great rivalry, of course, between Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk, particularly over the last number of years. Like, these two have won 9 of the last 12 League of Ireland titles between them, and they each had a decent Good Friday, to be fair. Rovers beat St. Pat's here with a Rory Gaffney goal, while Dundalk beat Sligo Rovers at Oriel Park with goals from Hooban and Daniel Kelly in a 2-1 win. Rovers have made 4 changes, though, which is perhaps a bit of a surprise. Gannon comes into the side in place of the captain, Ronan Finn, and Faruja comes into the side for Kavanagh. Dylan Watts will make his 100th appearance for the Hoops tonight, and he replaces Richie Towell. And the aforementioned Aaron Green comes in for Rory Gaffney, who scored that goal, the only goal of the game, against St. Pat's on Friday. I think the managers are very aware, you know, they have 3 games in a week, so Bowes away will be next for Shamrock Rovers. And would you believe I got here about 4 o'clock and there was queues of Rovers fans trying to buy their allocation of away tickets for that game in Dalymount Park next week, which of course once again will be a sellout, and a big crowd here tonight as well. So you'd have to say, in terms of attendances, the league is having a pretty good year so far. For Dundalk, well, they've made 5 changes. Maybe with that in mind as well, maybe Stevie O'Donnell is thinking about... They have Shelburne at home, Damien Duff Shelburne, as we have to call them now, on Friday. But as I say, they did have a good result against Sligo. Club captain Brian Gartland, Sam Bone, Keith Ward, Joe Adams and Paul Doyle all start. Andy Boyle, Pat Hooban and Stephen Bradley are on the bench. Robbie Benson and Dan Williams miss out with injury. Robbie Benson only made 21 minutes of the game against Sligo, and he had to go off injured, and Williams lasted about an hour. So a bit of a reshuffle. We think there might be a tactical change as well. We think they might go to 3 at the back, Brian Gartland, Mark Connolly and Sam Bone. But there's no, I suppose, recognised striker, if you like, in the Dundalk side. I mean, considering Hooban, Stephen Bradley and David McMillan are all on the bench, that's firepower that you can expect will see some action this evening. Their last meeting, a month ago exactly, ended in stalemate, a scoreless draw where Dundalk keeper Nathan Shepherd was the hero. But I'm expecting and hoping for goals this evening, and a beautiful, beautiful evening for football. So let's hope these two proud teams live up to that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of football on as well, and a big surprise, I think, really, to see, or maybe it wasn't, Tony, you tell me, to see Bowes beating Shelburne 4-1 a little bit earlier.
Well, Bowes have been so inconsistent themselves, and there's been war drums, if you like. There's been a lot of, I suppose, negativity around Bohemians. And, you know, I think that it's been very tough for them. Every year they seem to have to, you know, start again in many ways. They lose important players. And the amount of Dublin derbies this year are going to be significant, I think, in the title race, because it does take an awful lot out of you. And Shelburne are absolutely dreadful at home. I think that Damien Duff Shelburne would probably prefer to be on the road every game, the way things are going. An unexpected win for them up in Derry last week. But they really... got handed to it today, didn't they? A 4-1 defeat at home to their close North Dublin rivals, Bohemians.
Yeah, that was an interesting one, all right. And then, Alan, there's another game on at the moment as well. I know you're not watching it because you're being our roving reporter today, but St. Pat's leading UCD 2-1, obviously keen to bounce back after Friday night's disappointment.
Yeah, they will be keen to bounce back, Marie, because, as you said, it's disappointing to lose to Shamrock Rovers. And if they want to stay hot in the heels of those title challengers or contenders, obviously with Shamrock Rovers and Derry, they have to be picking up points against UCD. I think they fell a goal behind, but as you said, they're back now 2-1 in the lead. They should pick up the 3 points. It's been very, very tough for UCD this year, almost seen as the whipping boys Well, I'm looking at Finn Harp here, Marie, and I think the only thing that's separating them compared to UCD is the fact that they're so dogged and resilient, and the pitch up here is the best either. Maybe that's what keeps Finn Harps where they are year after year.
Yeah, because it's a tough place to go, isn't it, Alan?
It is. There's another one for you, Tony. It's a tough place to go. It really is. And I won't be back here for another year, so you can forget about the Rover report until next year again, Marie.
Right, well, lads, that's all we have time for. I've enjoyed your company immensely. Enjoy the football, Tony. Enjoy the playlist as well. And I will talk to you again soon. That is all we have time for this evening. We'll be back tomorrow with lots to reflect on after all of tonight's action. RTE 2FM.